Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Rechte Neckfahne mit dem linken Fuß. Bringt den Ball auf den zweiten Pfosten. Tesche! Tor! 1:0 für den VfL Bochum.
Da draußen ist der Ball frei. Und jetzt ist er drin. Jetzt ist er drin. Und hier ist Botzen, macht das Tor.
Und er ist drin. Buchmann, Buchmann, Buchmann macht das zweite Tor. Da ist das Tor. Der zählt das 2:2. Dresden ist wieder da. Röser ist da.
Für Rausch, der setzt an zur Flanke, da kommt der Ball, Trotte! Tor!
Hello and welcome to the Spider Bundesliga podcast with me, Matthew Karagic. The Spider Bundesliga is back and we saw some amazing football to whet the appetite from match day 19. First of all, I'm going to introduce my fellow guests. Once again, it's a very happy celebration for Bielefeld. They came from 3-1 down to beat Dresden. It's Eva. Eva, how are you doing today?
Very good, thank you.
And the word win is not often associated with Ingolstadt this season, but for Alex, it was very much the case on Tuesday. Alex, how are you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
That is great. And we're going to go straight into the action. Of course, we're going to have a look at match day 19. Then take a look forward at match day 20, which of course starts tonight if you are listening to this podcast on the Friday, which will be getting out ASAP for you. And then lastly, we've got a couple of topic questions which you've left for us to answer. So we're going to start in Köpenick, last night's game between Union Berlin and FC Köln. And it was Union Berlin taking a 2-0 win over the second place side. An unbelievably good goal by Marcel Hartl on 20 seconds, a beautiful chested and then bicycle kick to beat a stationary Timo Horn, and then Florian Hübner headering on the half-hour mark to condemn Köln to a defeat. Ken Reichel was sent off with about 20 minutes to go, but it didn't make much difference as Urs Fischer's side took the 3 points. Eva, I'm going to start with you. It was an unbelievable start to the game by Union Berlin, and they were able to just keep that going as the game went on.
Yeah, it was amazing to watch that game, especially in the first half. I think nobody expected that. Like, I didn't watch it from the first minute on, and then I looked at my phone. I was like, okay, well, what? Okay. And Union played amazing football, and Köln was really shocked. It was, as you said, an amazing bicycle kick by Hartl, a former Köln player. And kind of had plenty of chances after that, but they couldn't find the back of the net. Not something you often associate with Köln this season. And then Union striked again, and you could say that was the downfall for Köln.
Yeah, it was. And you really liked the fact that Union were able to keep that stranglehold, even when they went down to 10 men. It was a very impressive performance. You know, they ended 2018 with a defeat at Erzgebirge Aue, but they were very much at their defensive best last night. Alex, for Köln, it was a bit of a so-so performance for them. They were integrating a couple of their new players in Johannes Geis and Florian Kainz. How did you think those two played, and should we be concerned after this performance?
In terms of Geis and Kainz, I think it was as much as you could expect from two players who perhaps haven't played as much in the Bundesliga. And I think from that perspective, we could question whether it was correct to actually start them. They didn't look as sharp as perhaps they could have been. Like you mentioned off camera, it was a great shot for them to go behind after only 20 seconds to such a good goal. And even though it was a disappointing performance, I think FC will have enough over the coming weeks, and I'd expect an instant bounce back from them.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, you know, it's not particularly easy when you haven't played a lot of games in a season. And you look at Geis, you know, he hasn't played at all for Schalke in the Bundesliga. And you could tell he looked rusty. Some of his set pieces weren't up to the standard that a lot of people would hold him to. And I think it's going to take time. But, you know, players of that quality, and you look at the Köln side, and you would expect that that kind of performance won't be accepted again, especially for a team that needs to hold high standards for promotion. We go to Heidenheim next. They hosted Holstein Kiel. A very entertaining game to start. Three goals in the opening 15 minutes. but this point would be shared. It was a 2-2 draw with Timo Beermann scoring an own goal in 81 minutes to share the points between Heidenheim and Kiel. Alex, I'm going to start with you. Both teams, you know, without some star men. Kiel were missing David Kinsombi. Nikola Dovedan was out for Heidenheim and Schnatterer was on the bench. You know, your overall impression on the game and how did you think Kiel, you know, were able to work their way back into the game after going 2-1 down?
Actually enjoyed watching this one. There was some nice football on display. So, for example, Heidenheim's equaliser. Some nice football by Tomala into Glatzel and a good finish. But I think Kiel got back into the game in much same way that they actually combated Hamburg in December. There were a number of aerial balls and they created a number of chances through that. So Merling and Schindler had good chances. And even though the Beermann own goal was very unlucky from a Heidenheim perspective, it was perhaps justified that Kiel actually got back into this one. And you know, it was fair that the points were shared, I think, all around.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, it was a very good game to watch. It was easy on the eye. And both teams, as they've shown in the Hinrunde, that they both can play very attacking football. They're very good with possession, very creative. Each team has, you know, that excellent go-to factor. Eva, we will look at Heidenheim. Robert Glatzel made his first appearance for some time. He got on the score sheet. How important will it be for him to continue that scoring run with the likes of Nikola Dovedan coming back and, of course, Schnatter are set to start in the next one?
Yeah, I think for him, that goal gave a lot of self-confidence. He levelled for Heidenheim, and I think he's been a decent player throughout the season. He was, very, very good at this game. And I think it's going to be very hard for Dovedan and Schnatterer. You could see Schnatterer was on the bench, not very likely. And that was Glatzel had the chance, then used it, and that was pretty good for him, I guess.
It was indeed. And you think going forward, I mean, having that additional attacking option. I mean, we do forget he had 8 goals prior to this game, and he has a very decent scoring record. And I think if he can keep that at Heidenheim, are very much in a position to stay inside that top 6. The last of our group games is in Magdeburg, in Saxony. They hosted Erzgebirge Aue in an old-fashioned East German derby. And this game lived up to the expectation of one that was cagey, tight, and ruthless. And it was one goal that separated the two sides. And it was Magdeburg who got the winning goal through Felix Lohkemper 5 minutes before half-time. It's Magdeburg's first win under Michael Erning. And it is their first win at home this season. Eva, they're entrenched in the relegation battle. How big is this win for Magdeburg?
Very, very big, especially when you look at the other results with Ingolstadt winning as well, for example. It was very important for them to win that game. Also good to see how that Loria as the new goalkeeper kept a clean sheet, which gives him a lot of self-confidence as well for the following games, I guess. And as much as on personal opinion, it hurt to see them winning because that was bad for Armenia, but it was their first home win, and I think that gives them a lot of hope going forward, going to the next games. And if they, like, especially that clean sheet with no big mistakes on their defense, that is a huge win.
Yeah, their new signings really came up big. I thought Jan Kirchhoff was magnificent in midfield, and he talked about the goalkeeper. I mean, he's only been playing international football for Georgia, and you know, he's come into Magdeburg and he was very good between the sticks. And that goalkeeping play, they have lacked a bit. I mean, Brunster's been rather inconsistent, and then they had Yasmin Fezic at the start, and he was, well, the less said about him, the better. That's why he's back at Eintracht Braunschweig. Alex, you know, we saw our end 2018 in great form. They attacked quite well. They looked rather toothless in front of goal. What happened for them?
I think they were reverting to type, really. If you look over actual form, but I know they ended the year well, but they actually only won two away games so far this season, and one of those was at Foot, and their problems are well attested to at the moment. And so I don't think it was any surprise that they actually struggled on the road, especially in a derby. You mentioned they were toothless up front. I think the closest it came was when Emmanuel Ayoya hit the post, and even then it was a speculative effort, and if anything, I thought the Magdeburg goalkeeper could have done a bit better with that one. But I don't think it's any surprise to see our struggling away from home, really.
Yeah, and they are notoriously known for being reliant on their home form. They do have a gap between those bottom five teams, but they must be careful as those teams are coming up. To join us, our Group 2 game starts in a moment with Jan Regensburg and Paderborn.
Gut gestoppt für Al-Ghadioui und die Schussgelegenheit und das 1-0 für Jan Regensburg.
We make our way to the Continental Arena to start our Group 2 games. It was Jan Regensburg taking on Paderborn, and with the host taking a 2-0 win. Maximilian Thalhammer, who is on loan from Ingolstadt, he opened the scoring on 53 minutes, and then Wolfsburg loanee Sebastian Stolzer made it 2-0 to give Jan all 3 points. Alex, I'm going to ask you, Maxi Thalhammer, who's, you know, on Ingolstadt's books, on loan, can you tell us a little bit about him and the way he plays?
Yeah, definitely. So last season was actually his sort of breakout year, so to speak. He started away at Auer, and he's very much a player who likes to get on the ball, almost like late runs into the box in the Frank Lampard style, and I think his goal against Paderborn was a testament to that. It was a nice finish from the edge of the box, caressed into the corner. I mean, he's had a bit of time at Regensburg. It's only his, I think, third start, and it's the first since October. But ultimately, he seems to be developing at Regensburg, which is quite a strange loan from an Ingolstadt perspective. But it was good to see him get on the score sheet, definitely.
Yeah, he was very good. And Jan were in control of the game for most of the contest. I think the pleasing thing from a Regensburg perspective is that Marco Grotner and Sargas Adamyan both were playing, but neither of them found the back of the net. And the fact that they've found another bunch of scorers will be pivotal for their rise going forward. Eva, we'll ask you about Paderborn as much as they're non-talkable. They were pretty poor. They seemed very lackadaisical, you know, mentally they were there. What went wrong for them?
Yeah, I think what you said, they both focus, like from the beginning on, they both put a lot of pressure towards the opponent's defense. But after that 1-0 in the second half, it seemed like there was already no real danger coming from Paderborn. And then after the 1-0, Paderborn didn't really have the power or the danger to fight back. And also, Regensburg with a very good defense work. And yeah, then you can't win a game or level it if you don't even try it, obviously. And yeah, Paderborn is a team you can't really analyze very well, because they never play two games in a row similar in any way. And yeah, it's always very surprising what they do. But Regensburg is really, really good this season. We talked about it plenty of times. And then Paderborn was shown how it can go.
Yeah, indeed, that they were. Dennis Diekmeyer made his return to professional football on match day 19. It was very much the Dennis Diekmeyer derby as Hamburg hosted Sandhausen, and the right back was very much in the thick of the action as his side succumbed to a 2-1 defeat to his former side. He was partially at fault for letting Bakary Yata in for the opening goal to Pierre-Michel Lasogga. Then he won the penalty, which Andrew Vooten converted, and then Pierre-Michel Lasogga added a second to give Haasfeld all 3 points and give them a nice little cushion to FC Köln atop of the table. Eva, Haasfeld were dominant for long periods in this game. The score is a bit flattering. You would have thought they might have won by a bit more.
Yeah, especially against a team like Sandhausen, who aren't at their best at the moment, or in general this season. And yeah, they can be lucky that not only they won in the end, but that Köln lost as well. But just to back them up a bit, it would be better to like just settle it down earlier, just win 3-1, and Sandhausen wasn't that good. They had their chances as well, and Hamburg opened up a bit too much in the end. They had made a lot of mistakes, and they can be very lucky that they didn't like lose 2 points out of those three in the end, especially because Schoen had a very good day nonetheless.
Yeah, there was plenty of talk entering the game whether Marcel Schoen would get the start, whether it be him or Niklas Lom. Alex, you know, Uwe Koschina has been in the job at Sandhausen for quite some time, replacing Kinnan Kocacz. He has a tough job ahead, let's be honest. What were there any positives coming out of that game against HSV, or do you see a very rocky road going forward?
I suppose the only positive would be that they kept the score down, but I think, as we've mentioned, I think that was more due to Hamburg's poor finishing. You mentioned before briefly that Dietmar could have been at fault for Battery Jatter's assist, and I think that was definitely the case. It was a question of offside, but I mean, the defending does not fill you with confidence as well. The marking for Lasoga's second wasn't good enough, and when you consider that they haven't won in 9 games, I don't think it's any surprise when you see the performance they put in at the Volkspark Stadium.
Yeah, they were very ordinary, and they're where they belong in that relegation, that dogfight. They are in the playoff spot in 16th, but for how much longer? Another one of the teams that is in the basement is Duisburg. They played in the Lesser Ruhr Derby against VfL Bochum, and it was the host taking a 2-1 win. New signing Simon Soller endeared himself to the Bochum crowd with a goal, a poacher's goal, so to speak, on 13 minutes. Patrick Fabian made it 2 on 21 minutes. And then, just to make things a little bit hairy towards the end for Bochum, Manuel Riemann gifted Harvard Nielsen his first goal for Duisburg to make the scores 2-1, but it wasn't enough for Duisburg. Alex, you know, your team is very much in this relegation hunt at we'll speak of that in a moment. Duisburg were stuck in the gates for the first half. Your overall impression on their performance and are the new signings integrating well into the team?
Yeah, much as I mentioned with Sandhausen, then I really wasn't impressed with Duisburg this week. I expected a lot more from them, especially when you consider the calibre of players they've signed, such as Havard Nielsen. And in fact, Nielsen's, I think his shot in the first half, I think it may have been Duisburg's only shot in the first half, resembled more an NFL kick to get a Super Bowl reference in this weekend. But it wasn't good enough. And I mean, similar with Sandhausen, the fact that they got back into the game is a positive from their perspective. But then at the same time, I thought Bochum were quite unlucky to see Losilla's header ruled out in the first half for offside. And in fact, actually, he scored his first goal in Germany when he was at Dynamo Dresden against Duisburg as well. But I think they were unlucky to see that one ruled out.
Yeah, and had it been 3-0, it would have been curtains, and this game would have been done and dusted. It's a positive sign for Bochum, you know, Simon Soller getting his first goal. What kind of a role can he play for Bochum? And the importance that he can bring in terms of goals and assists for them going forward?
Yeah, I think for him, scoring that early, not only with his first position in the lineup, but also very early in the game, and that they won in the end, gives him a lot of hope for the next games, and not only for him, but for Bochum as well. He is a decent football player, I think, and that game showed that he deserves to play more often. He can be very important for Bochum for the second half of the season.
It will be interesting. I mean, Lee Chung-yong returns from the Asian Cup after South Korea were knocked out in the quarterfinals by Qatar. So it will be interesting to see what lineup Robin Dutt will go with on the weekend. I would like to see him persist with Soler and Hinterseer. But finding a way to integrate Chung-yong, I think he's been quite a good signing for them after becoming a free agent. We're going to take a quick breather. Do you join us? We start off our Group 3 games with the Uwe Neuhaus Derby.
Anstelle der Riesenchance und trotzdem das Tor! Der Captain trifft Arminia Bielefeld!
Yes, and we start our Group 3 games with the Uwe Neuhaus Derby. It was Dynamo Dresden versus Arminia Bielefeld. And what an unbelievably topsy-turvy game this was. It looked all Dresden's at halftime with goals from Osman Altijan, Brian Hammerleinen and Musa Kone. But there was a hilarious own goal scored by Baris Atik. And then in the second half, Bielefeld decided it was time to turn it on. Three goals in the second half. One for Jean-Simon Edmondson, one for Fabian Klose, and Julian Berner, the hero, scoring the winning goal on 78 minutes to cap off a crazy game of football. Eva, I'm going to start with you. Wow, what a win for Bielefeld.
Yeah, and yet again a sign to for me not to watch any away games. But yeah, in the first half, it was terrible defending. That 1-0, I don't know what Berner and Behren thought they would do in that situation, but clearly it was terrible, especially with Atagan. Yeah, it was his first game in from the beginning, and I think his first goal in Zweite Bundesliga. He's the youngest player to ever score for Dresden. And then that penalty, I don't know what Behren thought he would do in that, and then we had the chance to come back, but with help from Dresden, actually, as he said, that slapstick own goal by Artic. But then 6 minutes later, Kone with a 3-1. And although it might have been offside, it was a terrible performance in the first half. And after the break, so in both halves, the media was the team with the better start into it. But this time they actually used their chances. Happy to see Edmondson score again. He's a very important factor, as well as Yabo coming in. I think Neuhaus thought it might be too early. He was injured a long time, but you could see he was very important. He had some chances. Then the 3-3 due to the penalty again. And yeah, then the turning point, as like the complete turning point, was the red card against Hartmann. And then Julian Berner doing the same he did against Kiel. He seems to have his moments in the last 10 minutes. And what I thought was very surprising that Dresden didn't try to like level again at all. Like they were completely out of touch already after the 3-3. And normally in that situation, you say, okay, we're one man down. We either level or we get more goals, but they didn't do it. And I think that was, in the end, a deserved win, as Walpurgis and Neuhaus both said as well in the press conference afterwards.
Yeah, it was a crazy game. And, you know, I don't think we've seen an implosion this bad from a team this season that looks so comfortable going into half-time and finding a way to lose. And you know, you look to your leaders in situations like that, but it was Marco Hartmann who was the catalyst for the penalty, which, you know, whether he thinks it wasn't a penalty or not, it was. I mean, a clear tug of Fabian Klose. And then 10 minutes later, he does exactly the same thing in a dangerous area, and it leads to the goal. And yeah, what a bizarre game it was. And Alex, where did Dresden go from here? A game that they should have sewn up quite easily, they leave with nothing.
Definitely, and I think the worrying thing from Mike Valpurgis's perspective is it wasn't four moments of madness. From my perspective, watching that game, there were a number of times when Armenia could have got another goal or were handed an opportunity. For example, Vogelsammer hit the post or shaved the post, I believe. And you're, when you're gifting teams goals like the Atik own goal, it's, you're setting yourself up for failure, really. But as an aside, really, I've mentioned previously how scary Mike Valpurgis is, and after the rumours of Pep Guardiola keeping his squad in for 30 minutes after Manchester City's defeat at Newcastle, I would have hated to have been in that Dinamo Dresden squad. I mean, if Pep Guardiola kept the City squad in for 30 minutes, I presume Valpurgis kept them in for 3 hours.
Yeah. I think the talk is they're actually still in the change rooms as we speak. Old Mike's, you know, red as a tomato, so... what a disastrous performance that second half for Dresden, and that's probably the promising thing for Bielefeld, is that, you know, the changes, or the change in particular of Yarbol, he came on for Stalder after the 3-2. He was very good, and unlike many teams who have thrown their new signing straight on, Neuhaus, the old Wiley Fox, decided to ease him in, and he was very good, and there's probably a good chance he might start on the weekend. From Eva's team taking the 3 points to Alex's team taking the 3 points. Ingolstadt beating Greuther Fürth 1-0. This game was in Fürth. It was a Dario Lescano goal off a Mergen Mavrai 1 penalty. That was enough to give De Schanzer all 3 points for the first time under Jens Keller. Alex, I know this wasn't a game you watched live. You were watching City get beat by Newcastle. You know, it's an important win in the context of the relegation battle. Is it something that they can build on, or are you still worried that their goals are coming from the penalty spot?
I think you've raised a really good point, actually, in the fact that, yes, we did rely on a penalty to score, and the fact that, you know, Fort did the best to implode with two sendings off after that goal as well. So it's hard to judge really anything from that when you take the context of the game. But that said, I mean, it's only the second victory of the season, and in that sense, it has to be such an important 3 points, especially when you consider that, you know, teams like Magdeburg and Sandhausen are within a point again. Conceivably, if Ingolstadt are to beat Magdeburg on Friday evening, then they're already outside the relegation zone, depending on other results. Also, I think it's such an important result when you consider that this is Ingolstadt's first clean sheet of the season, but also the first clean sheet since the 6th of May 2018 in a 2-0 victory at Braunschweig. So that suggests that Keller has really done his work with the signings of Mavrai, Sean and Paulsen. And I think for the most part, they had quite a good game in Fürth.
Yeah, they did. I think Schalke, you know, it was a little bit quiet, but I think Mavrai and Paulsen in particular, they were astute in defence. They were very tight. But I think what probably made their job a lot easier was the fact that Fürth were once again just atrocious going forward. Lack of any sort of creativity. Their chances were limited. I think Philipp Schalke had a relatively easy game between the sticks. But I guess it's a good thing for him to ease into it, being the fourth keeper to represent Ingolstadt this season, and maybe he will be the one that keeps it nice and square between the pipes. Eva, Fürth have decided to continue on their relatively poor form from 2018 towards the end of Malacca and Seguin, capping it off with both being sent off in the final 10 minutes. I guess the question is, you know, they decided not to do a lot after those signings in the winter transfer. They desperately need another creative player in midfield. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, definitely. Especially if you look that on the statistics, it's the 8th time in a row that Fürth didn't manage to win at the start of a new year. That is quite impressive in not a positive way. It's like, as you said, there is a huge lack of creativity going forward, which they definitely need to improve coming the next game against in Paderborn. And to completely lose lose it like Mallorca and Seguin did, especially Seguin with that kind of kung fu fighting action, whatever that was, reminded me a bit of Müller in the Champions League. It's like Ingolstadt isn't the best this season, that is clearly to be seen. And then we had that hour game where they were very poor going forward, and it's very surprising not to see them getting any new signings that can be like really, really good for them, as you said, to bring in more creativity. And they need to improve, definitely. Like, I don't know how, but there needs to be a way.
Yeah, it's a long road for them. And, you know, playing a Paderborn side, which we'll talk about, that is coming off a defeat, is not exactly what the doctor ordered. Our last game of matchday 19 was Darmstadt against St. Pauli. And despite St. Pauli being, you know, largely the better side early on, it was two goals in the final 10 minutes from Darmstadt to give De Lilien all 3 points, an important one for Dirk Schuster's men. He admitted after the game that had Diamantakos converted one of his chances to make it 2-0, it would have been a lot harder for his side. Eva, Darmstadt had been largely unimpressive throughout the Hinrunde, but goals from Marcel Heller and Serdar Dursan giving them the win. What impressed you with their fight back in this game?
I think especially because they were the team that started with a lot more power. Nonetheless, no real shots on target on both sides, but Darmstadt had a series of chances in the middle of the first half, and then St. Pauli managed to score due to Miyaichi. And even Diamantakos had the chance to make it 2-0, but in the second half, it was this time St. Pauli who started off a bit better, but very impressed with Darmstadt, who fighted themselves back in the game after they may have should have awarded a penalty and I think 60 minutes into the game. And then to fight back like that, they had more strength in the end, you could say, in the last 10 minutes. Maya couldn't do anything for St. Pauli, and in the end, maybe if you're the team with more power and more willingly to win, you could say it was deserved in the end.
Yeah, the two goals they scored were quite good. The second from Dursan was a beautiful one. Alex, this was another team that kind of self-destructed towards the end of the contest, a game that they had a bit of control in. What would Marcus Kalczynski take away from this game?
I think the number one takeaway for him is, on a positive side, that they created so many chances. The negative to that is that they squandered most of them. So, for example, Diamantakos especially, he had two. He hit the post, which was unfortunate perhaps, but then he had a one-on-one, which he should have done a lot better with. And yet, ultimately, this is a game that St. Pauli should have been comfortably winning. And to come away with not just a single point, but nothing, is quite worrying, I'd say, for Marcus Kalczynski, especially when they're near the top of the table and you can't afford to drop silly points if they want to have any ambition of actually getting promoted.
Yeah, agreed. Very much like the chances they had, they squandered, and they squandered the opportunity to go second had they had taken their chance. Do join us. We will be back onto St. Pauli in just a moment when we begin our Matchday 20 preview. Do join us. Yes, and we start our Matchday 20 preview with the Monday night fixture. It is 3rd v. 4th, St. Pauli versus Union Berlin at the Millantor. It should be quite a good game when the two sides met. However, on early in the season, it was an easy win for Union Berlin, who won 4-1. Eva, I'm going to start with you. Union obviously coming off that very good win over FC Köln, but they have struggled away from home this season. Just the one win, to be a matter of fact. Can they get over that hump on Monday night?
Yeah, as you said, they're probably going to go into that game with a lot of confidence. They won against Köln, had a decent performance also. the statistics are, pro Union, you could say, because Union, in the all those fixtures, Union won 11 times, and the last time Zhang Pauli won at home was back in 2014, so 5 years ago. And yeah, Zhang Pauli needs to show a reaction. They have to play 90 minutes or, and plus 3-4 minutes of good football. Do not do the same as they did in Darmstadt. And we're talking Union now and not Darmstadt, who wasn't quite good in the past month. So Zhang Pauli needs a very good day on Monday. Going to be a very interesting fixture. Quite interesting to see how it turns out as well. But I would say I'd go for a draw, actually.
Alex, would you tend to agree with Eva? I mean, St. Pauli, you know, they had their chances against Darmstadt and failed to convert. First home game of 2019, they'll be looking to bounce back. How do you see this one going?
I would tend to agree, actually, with a draw. All the signs for me tend to suggest that, like we said, Union have struggled away from home and have only one win all season away from Berlin. But at the same time, St. Pauli do tend to struggle against what, in inverted commas, bigger teams. You know, they've lost to FC, Union and Kiel and drawn versus Hamburg. This is quite a historic fixture, actually. One of the traditional second division one, if you want to call it that. There's been 24 meetings between the two since 1995. But Union do have the edge in recent years, like Eva mentioned, and they've actually won 5 on the bounce against St. Pauli. So I think it's a hard one to call, really, and draw could be one that seems probable. What I would like to say is, though, I do love niche stats, so to speak, and Alex Meyer actually has 7 goals and 1 assist in 4 games versus Union, so he could actually have a big part to play in Monday evening's game. In fact, when he played Union in the 2007 Pokal first round, he actually scored a hat-trick. So you never know. This could be the game when Alex Meyer Fussball got returns to the limelight.
Well, there you go, Marcus Kalczynski. You know what to do. If you want the 3 points, you know, not every day do you have a Fussball got in the wings, and maybe it might be time to unleash him. The second of our Group 1 games brings us to Bielefeld. It's Eva's Armenia Bielefeld against top of the table Hamburger SV. Both sides coming off victories, but when the two sides met in the Hinrunde, it was a 3-0 victory for HSV, though quite controversially nonetheless. Eva, we know you're going to be at this game. Is there much optimism that Bielefeld could snatch a point against the best defensive team away from home?
Yeah, no. So, especially when you look at the statistics, in 37 games, we have 21 wins for HSV and only 7 for Armenia. Last time Armenia and HSV met at the Alm, Hamburg won 4-2. Of course, this win, they both played Bundesliga back in 2008. And Armenia's last win against HSV is more than 14 years ago. So history might suggest that we don't see a home win for Armenia. Would be one of the last games I would expect one. They need a very, very good day, and the HSV offense and defense need a rather bad one that we could win this. And I just hope we don't get too many goals. We can't definitely play like we played against Dresden in the first half. But I guess what might be quite good, it's a sold-out house, and that can always turn the game around a bit.
Yeah, we've seen with a few teams this season how the importance of home support, and maybe that might be the driving factor to get Bielefeld up and running. Alex, you know, we've seen HSV, you know, the top of the table. Hannes Wolf has steadied the ship. You know, especially defensively, they're a lot better than they were under Christian Tietz. It's a good chance they can smash some goals in against Bielefeld, who have been relatively inconsistent. What are your thoughts on how HSV can tackle this Bielefeld side?
Yeah, I tend to agree with your comment regarding goals. You know, they've scored 12 in the last five visits to Bielefeld. And so that suggests, you know, that they could really have a fun day in Bielefeld. But then at the same time, looking back to the game at Kiel, a similar sort of venue, it's going to be a tight and vociferous atmosphere. If Armenia can attempt to replicate what Kiel did, then there's the chance that we could see an upset. That said, Hamburg, like you mentioned, do have the second best defensive record as well, and away from home they've actually won 7 from 9. So even though Kiel seemed to have done a tactical masterpiece over Hamburg, I think all signs suggest that Hannes Wolf will be coming away from Bielefeld with another 3 points, maybe.
We shall wait and see. The final of our Group 1 games takes us to Saxony. It's Erzgebirge Aue versus FC Köln. Of course, it's the second game on the east side of Germany for Köln. They obviously had the defeat at Union Berlin last night. this will be a tricky fixture for Köln. I mean, they were a bit toothless going forward. They didn't have that same sort of fluidity that we've expected for them. And it could be quite tricky. Auer quite good at home. Alex, we saw the lack of inventiveness from Köln, which we haven't said very often this season. What will they need to do to combat this stout Erzgebirge Auer side?
I think the important thing to do when you're playing at the Erzgebirge Stadion is to get off to a fast start. There's nothing worse than going to a small, compact venue in the Ore Mountains and letting the home side get on top and get the crowd behind them. And historically, this is something that FC have actually failed to do. They're winless in Auer since 2007. The last time they actually played at the Erzgebirge Stadion was in 2014. That was a 2-2 draw. Hector Horn and Reese actually remain from that squad. But then again, you're bigging up how much Auer could have an upset. They tend to be like Marmite, you know. 1 week they can beat Union 3-0 at home, and the next they're defeated 1-0 away at Magdeburg. So it's quite, it's an interesting one really, because FC have struggled at Auer, yet at the same time, Auer at Auer. But like, as you mentioned, Hamburg and Sandhausen are the only teams to actually come away victorious from the Erzgebirge Stadion. So I think it's fitting up for a really entertaining game. But at the same time, I think Auer can expect a bit of a backlash from Max Anfang's Köln after that defeat against Union.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, we haven't seen Köln string two ordinary performances together, and they wouldn't want to be coming back from the east part of Germany with that in mind. Eva, I mean, we lauded at Auer towards the end of 2018. Obviously not an ideal start to 2019. What would be the best prone of attack for them to nullify Köln? Would it be to try and follow Union's tactical masterpiece?
Yeah, so as we saw yesterday evening, Köln can't really handle if they're back early in the game, especially if they're away. And that might be the key for Auer to win that game. But I definitely agree, Auer isn't very predictable. But if you have a test hold up front who loves to score normally, as well as Tirode does, we might see a quite interesting game, because Köln will be eager not to lose touch with HSV, because when we're honest, it's very likely that HSV get their next 3 points tomorrow. And that will be Köln's goal, to not to lose points in any ways.
Yeah, I mean, they couldn't afford to lose again. And with St. Pauli and Union Berlin nipping at their heels, it won't be a good look for Marcus Anfang if that is the case. We're going to take a quick break. Do join us for our Group 2 game, starting off with Holstein Kiel and Jan Regensburg. Yes, and we start those Group 2 fixtures in Kiel. They host Jan Regensburg. Of course, Holstein Kiel coming off a 2-2 draw with Heidenheim. Jan Regensburg winning 2-0 over Paderborn. In fact, when the two sides met earlier this season, it was a 0-0 draw. And when you consider when both sides play quite attacking football, it was quite a shock. Alex, I'm going to start with you. What should we expect from both teams, and how do you see it going?
It's, like you mentioned, it's an interesting one, really. Akin Beylozer has never actually defeated Kiel in his three attempts so far. But then to counter that, Jahn have travelled well this season. Over 50% of their points have actually come away from Niederbayern. And their last away defeat actually came on the 1st of September at Evers, Arminia Bielefeld. Added to the fact that Kiel are still without David Kinsombi, then that suggests that Regensburg would potentially be the favourites. But as I'm sure you're aware, travelling to Kiel is never easy. And they defeated Hamburg with ease, actually, in that game before the winter break. And so I think, like the Union San Paolo game, this one I see being extremely tight and either ending in a draw or a narrow win for either side.
Yeah, it's going to be tight. It's going to be interesting to see how Kiel lines up. I mean, they do have three new toys for Tim Volder to play with. Laszlo Benes from Borussia Mönchengladbach, Patrick Kammerbauer from Freiburg, and of course, Frank Ivino, who in fact he coached at his time at Bayern München 2. Eva, how do you see this tipping? I mean, as Alex said, Jahn have been surprisingly good away from home, which is quite contrasting to their form last season. Is there a chance that they could steal the points here, or do you agree that it will be a draw?
Yeah, very tough one to decide on, but as early history might suggest, the last two games were draws, actually. Regensburg had a good game against Paderborn, Kiel with not the best performance against Heidenheim. So if I choose a winner, I'd actually go with Regensburg, but I would agree that a draw is very likely as well.
Yeah, it will be an interesting game, and let's hope it's not 0-0 at the end of the 90. We go to Paderborn for the second of our Group 2 games. They host Greuther Fürth, both teams coming off defeats midweek. Eva, I'm going to start with you. I mean, this is probably the ideal bounce-back game for Paderborn. I mean, Greuther Fürth are really there for the taking, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely. Fürth is very poor, as we talked about, lacking creativity in a lot of ways. But also Paderborn at home isn't not very stable all the times. And to cheer up Danny a bit, history actually suggests that there could be a win for Fürth in 19 games. Fürth won 9 times, Paderborn only 3, but also there were 7 draws. So for both teams, a draw wouldn't really help. For Paderborn, they both need to show reaction to the last games. It's going to be a very tough one for Fürth, but they need a very good day. But in the end, I'd probably go with Paderborn.
Yeah, speaking of one of those 7 draws, they did draw in their first meeting this season, the game ending 2-2. Alex, I mean, Fürth have been worth talking about because their slump has been quite meteoric in some ways. They do play a Paderborn side that does cough up a lot of goals. Is there any chance that, despite their lack of creativity going forward, they could cause some damage for Paderborn's defence?
I mean, at the start of the season, the Fürth were one of the shock teams in a positive sense, even though it's been the opposite recently. And so I don't think you can ever really rule them out. If they can return to that form, there's no reason why they can't win at Paderborn. But as we know, the long journey to Paderborn's tin hut is always difficult. And, as like Eva mentioned, history does suggest that Paderborn actually struggle against Fürth. So the last time Paderborn actually beat Fürth was November 2009. Mahir Saglik scored that day, and if anyone can remember him, an icon of the Zweite Bundesliga. It's difficult, really, because Fürth have struggled at the back. they conceded 12 in their last five, and without a clean sheet in September. Added to the fact that Paul Seguin is unavailable due to his straight red against Ingolstadt, then that suggests that Ford may concede a few more at the coming weekend. Again, it's a difficult one to struggle to call, really, with both teams not having the greatest start back to Zweite Bundesliga action. And so I'm not really sure how I could call this one, to be honest.
Yeah, as much as it's probably line-ish here, I think Paderborn will get the job done. I think when they've had poor games, they've generally been able to bounce back and bounce back with authority, and I think it might be a really difficult day in Paderborn for Fürth. The last of our Group 2 games brings us to Heidenheim. They host Dynamo Dresden. Of course, Heidenheim getting a 2-2 draw against Holstein Kiel, whilst, of course, Dresden losing the Uwe Neuhaus derby 4-3 in a game they were 3-1 up. Marco Hartmann will be out. Of course, he was sent off in the game. And when the two sides met last time, it was a Mark Schnatterer clinic. He scored a beautiful free kick in a brace, which gave Heidenheim all 3 points. Alex, I'll start with you. We talk about Dresden's bone-shattering collapse. What is going to be the most important thing for Mike Valpurgis' side going into this game?
I think just getting a victory by all means really would be the most important thing. The Bielefeld game will have been a moral-sapping one. It's a throwaway game in such circumstances. And against the Heidenheim team this weekend that, again, fared quite well against in the Zweite Bundesliga. In fact, Heidenheim's victory in Dresden on match day 3 of this season was actually the first Zweite Bundesliga win that Heidenheim have actually ever had against Dynamo Dresden. I think Mike Valpurgis will be earned with confidence by the fact that Moussa Kone actually has 3 goals in his 2 appearances against Frank Schmidt's side. But then at the same time, Heidenheim will be bolstered by the news that actually, just as we're on film here, that Mark Schnatter has actually extended his contract until 2021 with Heidenheim. So that will provide Heidenheim and Frank Schmidt on the opposite side a boost of confidence going into their Dresden game.
Yeah, it will, and it's good to see the Heidenheim legend, or Mr. Heidenheim, extending his contract till 2021. Of course, Nikola Dovedan will be back from suspension, bringing that dynamic duo back to the forefront. Heidenheim coming off that draw, they played some really good football. How do you think they'll tackle Dresden, and what kind of problems do you reckon they can cause them?
Yeah, so they are very efficient. We talked about that plenty of times in 2018, especially at the end. Even if they don't create that many chances, they can easily end the game with 3 points for their own side. And so Dresden didn't play bad, that what we talked about in the first half, and that what they can maybe put their hopes on, that they're able to play good football, actually. It's going to be hard that, although with Hartmann out, he just came back into the lineup. But statistics say last time they played in Heidenheim, Dresden won 2-0 back in 2017, and they only lost one of the last 6 games against Heidenheim. It might be quite interesting to see if Bernich, so their new defender from Dortmund, is going to start. I would say Dresden has a chance to win if they play 90 minutes of concentrated football.
It will be interesting. Just a nice little stat with Bernich. I think the last time he joined a club on loan from Borussia Dortmund was Stuttgart, and if my memory serves me correctly, he was sent off in that game. So maybe he might ease off the tackles. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to head straight into our Group 3 games, and then your topic questions, of course, but we'll start with Duisburg and Darmstadt. The last of our groupings, of course, last but not the least, of course, we start with Duisburg versus Darmstadt, a massive game for Duisburg in the context of the relegation battle. They, of course, were in relatively okay shape heading into match day 19, but they now sit rock bottom behind the likes of Ingolstadt, Sandhausen and Magdeburg. Alex, I'm going to start with you. A win is a must for Thorsten Liebknecht's side, and another defeat, and you really start to sense that this season is very much getting away from them.
Definitely. And unfortunately for Duisburg fans, history books don't side with them. I do study history, and I do love to mention history. And so Darmstadt are actually without Duisburg since 1993. And to put that in perspective, this is an extremely historic game. The first meeting between the two came in 1978, which was a 4-4 draw. And Michael Turnies is actually the joint top scorer in this fixture. So there's a lot of history to do with this one. We've mentioned Duisburg weren't impressive at Bochum, but when you assign players of the calibre of Havard Nielsen and Felix Wiedwald, then if the crowd can get behind them, then there's no reason why they can't pull off a shock in many senses and actually go against the history books and get a result. But Darmstadt at the same time, coming off that victory against St. Pauli, will evidently be a threat.
That they will, and they showed great resilience in that win over St. Pauli. There is some team news for Darmstadt. They've made two new signings to shore up that defence. Patrick Herrmann from Holstein Kiel has come in, and same with Matthias Vitek from Heidenheim. But it seemed quite competent defensive duo of Emmanuel Horn and Marcel Franke. Their problems generally lie up top, but we saw that that Darmstadt can play the final 10 minutes with real intensity and obviously found their way as winners on match day 19. Can they repeat that for a full 90 here?
Yeah, especially against Duisburg, who is not in the best place at the moment. I think they could really win. I definitely say they're the more likely team to win. Duisburg is very poor. And yeah, in 24 games, Darmstadt scored 51 goals against Duisburg. That's a nearly an average of 4 goals per game in total, with both combining. And they, especially winning that game against St. Pauli in the last 10 minutes, might give them a lot of confidence. And I definitely say Darmstadt is going to win.
Yeah, I'm almost half on the fence with this one, but I just Duisburg don't really exude confidence to back them, and I think maybe I would edge Darmstadt as the winners. One of tonight's games, in fact, is Ingolstadt and Magdeburg. This one's being played at the Audi Spor Park. Alex, we'll start with you on this one. Ingolstadt's coming off a crucial win against Bavarian rivals Fürth. What can we see and expect from Ingolstadt coming into this game?
I think it'll be much of the same in terms of the performance. Jens Keller has made it clear in his press conference that he really wants a result against Magdeburg, not only for the team sporting perspective, but also for the fans. He mentioned how the fans have struggled a lot recently and that they haven't had much to cheer for. But it's a strange one to call, really, at the same time. It's a meeting of the teams with the joint worst defence, both conceding 35 goals. But at the same time, the teams have two of the four worst attacking records. So it's hard to really see how you can differentiate these two sides. Saying that Ingolstadt, the new signings, were promising at foot. And I think Ingolstadt will really be banking for a second win on the bounce, really, and hopefully move further away from the relegation positions. And if they win, they can potentially find themselves outside of the relegation spots entirely, which is extremely good considering they were rock bottom over the entirety of the winter break.
Yeah, and you do mention their signings, and they will play a pivotal role in the makeup of whether they stay up or go down. And that's the same with Magdeburg, whose signings were very impressive in midweek versus our. So I'll bring the Magdeburg section to you, Eva. What can they do to disrupt Ingolstadt and perhaps steal the victory here?
Yeah, definitely. The first thing would be to keep the clean sheet they got. That is one of the most important things to concentrate on. And if they manage to do that, they definitely have a chance to win. And whoever wins that game is maybe one of the match winners of this match day down of the table. And yeah, it's going to be a very tough game for both sides. They both won their last game, which is good for them. And a lot of self-confidence. And as Alex said, Ingolstadt probably wants to show their fans at home that they can win there as well.
Yep. And, you know, it would be crucial for either team to get the points here. And especially with how tight it is down at the bottom. The last of our games for match day 20 is in Sandhausen. They host Borkum. You know, Sandhausen sit in 16th. Whilst Borkum are in that top half of the table, making a run at a potentially dark horse state promotion bid. Heaver, I'll start with you. I mean, you know, Borkum have, you know, they brought in a couple of new signings, Simon Soller and Baumgartner in defence. You know, they both played relatively well. You know, we know how tough it is to get points in Sandhausen, despite how bad they've been this season. What do they have to do to break down a very tough Sandhausen defence?
Yeah, as the HSV could show, there are always some gaps in the defence, and that's maybe a way for Bochum to use them. That's the second game they play against a team from the bottom of the table. Yeah, history doesn't really speak for Sandhausen as well. They couldn't manage to win the last 9 games against Bochum. Bochum is in a way better position than Sandhausen is. And yeah, they definitely need to... They showed a decent performance against HSV in the end, I guess, but they need to do a bit more to win against Bochum. And yeah, if they keep a clean sheet, they have the same with earlier Magdeburg, they have a chance to win. But if they don't manage that, of course, it's more likely that Bochum will take the 3 points home.
Alex, do you tend to agree? Despite Bochum only winning twice away from home this season, do you think that they can take the points here?
I would tend to agree, yes. Even though, like you mentioned, they've only actually won 2 away from home, one of those did come at Köln. So, on the day, Bochum can beat any side away from home. Added to that, Sandhausen have the second worst home record with only 7 points. You know, though, to put into context, they only have 13. So, Bochum on the day, like I mentioned, can beat anyone. But then on the day, they can be one of the best teams in the division as well. And if Simon Zoller can keep up the form that he showed against Duisburg on the previous match day, then I think there's no reason why Robin Dutt's side can't come away with all 3 points.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think Sandhausen are very much in a very tough situation. You'd like them to see Fabian Schleusner get the start. I mean, he's arguably been one of their better players this season. I think for them going forward, if they are to stay up, he will play a pivotal role in that. To your fan topic questions, we have just the 2 this week. The first one comes from Eric Kaufman at Shrieker2112. He says, he asks if there's any idea why the Zweite Bundesliga came out of a winter break in midweek instead of last weekend. Seems to have needlessly forced teams to play on short rest this weekend. Eva, I'm going to start with you. Any conspiracy theory as to why the DFL decided to go with a midweek fixture to start instead of last weekend?
Yeah, sadly, the only reason I have is probably the TV money, because I don't see any other way. We have that, so we have this as a small English week, you could say, and then next week we have the DFB Pokal. where still some Zweite Bundesliga teams are playing. And yeah, that is something I don't really get, especially we have Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday and Friday, Saturday, Sunday and Monday. So they way too many games, especially if you look at the distance. I don't get it. For example, Armenia played in Dresden. They were back yesterday at noon because it was very stupid to drive home on Wednesday night. And now they have like one day more or less to look at that HSV game tomorrow, which isn't easy to play. And that is something I don't really get. Why ever they did it, it's probably because of money, and that's all.
Alex, your thoughts?
No, I tend to agree with Eva, and I think it's quite sad, really. Speaking for myself and many others who follow German football, but particularly the Zweite Bundesliga from abroad, particularly England, it's the fan friendliness that is one of the major attractions, and from our perspective, from Britain, that the DFL and DFB actually look after fans, and this appears to be a move in the complete opposite direction. I think it's no surprise, like as Eva mentioned, they wanted a game every single day of the week, and to, you know, so TV viewing figures could be maximised. I think that's evident by the fact that Union Köln was on a Thursday night. It just unexplainable, really. And it's meant, as Eric mentioned in his question, it means that teams like Ingolstadt, Magdeburg, Duisburg and Darmstadt have had only a three-day turnaround in between games. And that's not only made life difficult for the playing staff, but it's also made life difficult for everyone else associated with the club, from the catering staff to the journalists at the club as well. So it's an extremely silly one decision, and hopefully that we won't see anything like this again, though I don't hold my breath.
Yeah, I tend to agree. It's pretty ordinary, and especially when you think of German football as more of a fan-friendly fare compared to other leagues, it is rather disappointing. The last question, it's a two-part question, comes from Steel Penguin at Steel Penguin 3. It says, hello, everybody. I have two questions. Given how Holstein Kiel played against HSV, do you see more teams replicating this style? And secondly, do you see St. Pauli holding off Union Kiel and Heidenheim for the promotional playoffs? But we'll start with the first question. Alex, I'll start with you. You know, we talked about this before, and in our Armenia HSV preview, they've obviously got a blueprint to how to beat HSV. Do you expect teams to try and replicate that?
It was actually a really interesting question, and after I saw we were going to be answering it, I actually had a specific look back at the Hamburg Kiel game, and it was really interesting. There was a clear style in terms of lofted balls, and Hamburg really did actually struggle with that for the first goal. Mangala, poor marking of Merling, and it continued. Van der Ongelen and Bates really struggled with these diagonal lofted through balls, and so if teams can replicate that to an extent, then I'd say yeah, they can really get at Hamburg, and I'd see no reason why teams wouldn't try and replicate that. But then at the same time, in that Kiel game, Hamburg were back in the game out of nowhere for a bit of Basri Jatta magic, and they could have been level via Bates. So even though Kiel showed that there's Zweite Bundesliga how to beat Hamburg via that style, Hamburg still have the potency, really, to negate that and still win regardless.
Eva, do you tend to agree? Do you think that... Would you like to see Bielefeld kind of utilise that Kiel style against HSV?
Yeah, I think the problem is that Kiel and Bielefeld play different kind of football, and if we can adapt it, like, we're not the only ones know about it. Hamburg can try to do the same and look at their mistakes. They definitely should have done it, losing twice to Kiel. And I don't know if it's that good to, in the second game of the new year, to already give a completely new system to the players, just to say, okay, that was working for Kiel in two games, but it's a question if it's going to work for us as well. So tough one. There might be other teams that can adapt Kiel's way of playing, but I don't think Armenia is one to do it.
Yeah, and the second part of that question is relative to the promotional playoff spot at the top. Just one word answers, just to keep it short. So St. Pauli, can they hold off Union Berlin, Kiel, or Heidenheim? Just give us a yes or no, and who you think will finish third. So I'll start with you, Eva.
Yeah, it's difficult. I'd say no, definitely, actually, because other teams are a bit more consistent than they are.
Okay. Alex?
Yeah, much of the same for me. Unfortunately, I have to say no. I think Union will just motor the way through efficiently to the end of the season in third place.
No, I'm going to stick with the optimism for myself. I'm going to say St. Pauli will hold on and finish in third place. That is all the time we have. We thank you for listening. Big thank you to Alex and Eva for once again joining us to deliberate all things Zweite Bundesliga. We hope you have a great weekend and good luck for your teams on the weekend. Goodbye.